Hi there, and greetings to everyone seeking and hoping to find the true meaning of life, those sick and tired of this poisonous world whose soul and spirit are bleeding, and of the emptiness and futility of this materialistic civilization. Welcome to our radio show, The Way, The Truth, The Life. Welcome to our world of supreme love and immortality, where all human hopes are fulfilled. Welcome to the world of Orthodox Christian spirituality, a world now unknown to the West, which once had the key, but lost it a long time ago, the key that has an answer to every question. My name is monk Arsenije Jovanović. I live in the monastery of Ostrog, Montenegro. It is never too easy to talk on spiritual issues, especially when it has to be in foreign language, which is English to me. I apologize in advance for possible mistakes. However, I believe God will help me to say the word and you to understand it. So, let us embark on our waves. Good evening, dear listeners. We are again in our show, The Way, The Life and The Truth. This time we are going to make a break again concerning my talk show. And this time we will have a guest. This time we are going to have a guest from the United States. And he's a young person. And he's an Orthodox Christian monk who lives in Monastery of Platina in California. And he was very kind to be in our show. So, Father Sofroni, hello.
Hello.
How do you say in? Do you have some certain greeting in English between spiritual people? Because we say in Serbian, God helps.
Right. Yeah.
Maybe not yet.
In America, we don't. No. No.
Okay. So, Father Sofroni, if you don't mind, tell us a little bit about yourself. Where are you coming from?
Well, I was born near the city of Seattle in the Northwest. Mm-hmm. In the suburbs, and I guess my life was pretty average, suburban American life. My dad worked in banks, and my mom...
When were you born?
1988, sorry.
88.
Yes, I'm 26 now.
Mm-hmm.
And my mom worked in commercial printing, and it was nice, I guess. And I have one sister who's older than me, and...
What is your background? In terms of nationality and religion.
Ah, okay. We grew up Anglican, but mm-hmm. we didn't go to church that much.
Yeah.
Maybe a couple times a year.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't actually know what the resurrection was until I was 15, and I learned it in school. just to give you an idea.
Yes.
And then in terms of ethnicity, mm-hmm. my dad's family is Romanian and Scottish.
Mm-hmm.
And my mom's family is Norwegian, French, and Armenian.
Mm, interesting.
But the French is more recent, and so my mom actually was speaking to us in French growing up at home.
Oh, really?
And so I learned it early on. But for some reason, my sister didn't want to, so she doesn't remember anything now.
So you're real international, or just say American?
I'm American, I guess. Yeah.
Yes.
I don't know.
Yes. And how come you came in touch with Orthodoxy?
Well, that's kind of a longer story, but so we weren't that religious growing up,
mm-hmm.
But we still had, you know, connections to like a local church, which I think is pretty common in America just for social reasons and cultural reasons.
Uh-huh.
People still have like a church that they supposedly go to. Whether or not they actually do is different, but so when I was 14, They were having like a mission trip to Mexico for young people to build houses and such and work with the poor people. Mm-hmm. And I just kind of wanted to go, just to go. I mean,
was by the church?
Yeah, with the Episcopal Church. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't really religious, didn't really believe much, but I thought, well, it'd be nice to go. So I decided to go. And so I was 14, it was in the summer, and we were there for a few weeks in Ciudad Juarez. Just like in the central Mexico. Mm-hmm. And we worked in what was basically a ghetto. Most people live in houses made out of trash, literally. Like they're made out of, they take mattresses and they set them on fire and burn them. And that's like the foundations of the walls. And then they fill them with trash. And that's what they live in. And that's where we were. I mean, I'm coming from this upper middle class suburb. And I was like, what? But that actually turned out to be a good thing, because most of the people we were working with in Mexico, they were very pious Christian people. You know, they weren't Orthodox, they were Catholics or Protestants, but they were very pious. You know, they had like prayer meetings every day that we had to go to. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, I just observed their lives. I observed these people, and they're very poor. You know, they live in a garbage dump. Yeah. But I saw that they were happier than me, that they had something that I didn't have. They were smiling and happy, and they gave what they had. They were generous. You know, they didn't have much, but they'll give you all the food they have. And I just never seen anything like that before. And so I was just, what is this? What is going on? And so one night in Mexico, I was sitting on this hill that overlooks the city. It's inside this compound we were staying in. I was just like looking at it and thinking about all the crime. You know, like in this city, like someone is murdered every single day. Yeah. Or like once while we were there, there was a drive-by shooting outside where we were staying. You know, it's crazy. Mm-hmm. And so I was thinking about all this, but like, why are they happier than me? Why, you know, it's just obvious to me that they're happier than anyone I know. Mm-hmm. And it occurred to me that, well, they have God in their lives. And that must be something real. Before that, it never occurred to me that it was something, God was something real, that he was a person. He was always so distant, mm-hmm. something so far away that you can't know. And if I did think about God, I was scared, so I just tried not to think about it, like most American people. I think most American people, they do believe in God, but they don't want to think about him because it's scary. Oh, yeah. You know, the sort of like Calvinist ideas, I think, linger in the American conscience that God is angry.
Oh, yeah.
Even if they're not ever actually Calvinist, it lingers in our consciousness, I think.
And but so, don't you think it comes from Roman Catholicism?
It could be that, but I mean, you know, America was founded by the Puritans.
Yeah, that's right.
And so that really, I think, set the tone for all of religious life in America. Yeah. Even Catholics and Orthodox, you can see the influences mm-hmm. of that kind of thinking. Yeah. But so anyways, so I was sitting on this hill and I was thinking about this, and suddenly I felt, I was just filled with this intense love that I'd never felt before, ever, anything like this. This like intense acceptance. Not that like I'm okay the way I am, that I'm just living perfectly, but that despite who I am, God still loves me totally and accepts me totally. And I'd never experienced anything like that ever. And, I mean, it didn't last forever, it lasted maybe...
You were just thinking, you didn't pray at that moment.
No.
Just thinking about life.
Yeah,
about...
yeah, just thinking. And, but I knew it was God, and it was obvious to me that's what it was. Was this is God, this is who he is.
Yeah.
And it only lasted a few minutes, but from then it was just like, this is, I need to find this. Where can I find this again? How do I find this? It just made sense to me that there must be some way you can live your life, that you can know this God, that he's not just some experience you have and then that's it. Yeah. It made sense to me that there must be a way you can live to experience this more often, so I was looking. And so then I started to actually go to the Episcopal Church that we were part of. Like, I went, you know, every Sunday, and but I didn't really find it there. I was like, no, I don't think this is it. I don't think it's here. And so I started to read about theology and church history. You know, I'm like 15 years old.
Very fast.
And so I was interested in the Catholic Church for a while because, you know, they can make some claims that they have original Christianity.
Yeah. They have sacraments.
Yeah, you know, they definitely have more than Protestantism.
Yeah.
But honestly, I mean, with the Catholic Church in America, it's very Protestantized. It's not like in Europe. Mm-hmm. I was actually kind of scandalized when I first went to Catholic Mass because in the Episcopal Church, they're very liberal and they don't really believe a lot, but they're very liturgical. It's very traditional in terms of how they serve the liturgy. Mm-hmm. Whereas the Catholic Church, it's all like modern, contemporary music and like...
Really?
Yeah, in America. I know it's different here, but...
Yeah.
And so I went to Mass and like I was just like, what is this? This isn't what I read in my books, you know? And especially, I was always especially interested in the Eucharist, like in communion, because, you know, my first experience with God was this total love, so I wanted communion with God. That's what I was looking for, is communion with God.
Yeah.
So for some reason I was really interested in the sacrament of communion. And so I went to Mass and people, you know, they just take the wafer and they put it in your hand and they would eat it walking away. And I'm like, what is that? Because in the Episcopal Church, you know, they don't actually believe it's the body of Christ, but they still put it in your mouth for you and you kneel and it's respectful. And this was just, what is this? So I kept reading and I actually did go to Catholic Mass, you know, for about over a year.
Over a year.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I was still, it was kind of strange. I'd go to the Episcopal Church in the morning, and then in the evening I'd go to the Catholic Mass with a friend of mine from school.
So Mass or liturgy is in the evening?
Yeah, in America they do it whenever, and a lot of times they do it in the evening just so people will go.
So you take communion no matter if you ate before that?
Oh yeah, there's no fasting in the Catholic Church in America, no.
Mm-hmm. And so you can take communion
whenever?
Whenever.
Yeah. And I think they do Mass so much in the evenings now because people are lazy and they don't want to get up in the morning.
Oh,
and
my God.
I mean, they have it still in the morning, but
yes.
It seems to me a lot of people go in the evening. So I'd go in the evening with my friend from school.
Mm-hmm.
About a year. And then I was reading a book. It wasn't a religious book. It was a novel about a Greek-American family and their life in America and all this. And it was called Middlesex. It's the name of the town they lived in America. And it, of course, since they're Greeks, it mentioned Orthodoxy. And I'd never heard of it before, and it was just enough to get me interested. And I was like, what is this? Because the author may seem to have claimed, like, you know, before Martin Luther wrote his theses and before the Pope declared himself infallible, there were the Greek Orthodox. And I'm like, what? There's a church older than the Catholic Church? What? I need to find out about this.
Mm-hmm.
So I read, Then later that week I went to the bookstore. And I just happened to find Way of the Pilgrim on the bookshelf.
Mm.
I'm like, well, this looks interesting. And so I bought it, and I read it. I'm like, oh, my God. I need to do this.
Was it just a common bookshop? Or?
Yeah, it was just a regular bookshelf in a regular bookstore.
Yeah.
It wasn't a special bookstore. It was a regular bookstore.
Uh-huh.
And I read it, you know, and I was like, I need to do this. I have to do this. And so I read about the Jesus Prayer, and I started praying the Jesus Prayer, and I got an Orthodox prayer book, and I started doing regular prayers at home.
Mm-hmm.
And I started fasting.
You didn't go to...
I hadn't been in the Orthodox Church yet. I was kind of intimidated because it's like, oh, they have these different cultures and maybe I'm not welcome and I don't know. And so one day it happened that I went by accident. I was going to go to a Latin Mass, you know, where it's in Latin still in the Catholic Church because it's more traditional. But I was running late. Because I went to get coffee on the way. I went to Starbucks. And I'm like, well, I can't be late because they'll stare at me. Like in American Catholic churches, if you're late, people turn around and they stare at you. And it's like, it's really awkward. And so I didn't want to do that. I'm like, well, I know where the Orthodox Church is. And I read that you can be late there. They don't care. So I'll go there. So I finally went to the Orthodox Church because I could be late.
Uh-huh.
And no one would care.
Good. Good. I like that.
And so, I walked in, and it was a Russian church in Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
It's called St. Spiridon. And the Divine Liturgy was in progress, and I walk in, and immediately it was the same feeling I had in Mexico. The same feeling. The same, like, total acceptance. And I'm like, okay, it's here. God is here. Okay, this is it.
You didn't feel that during your Jesus prayer or reading the Orthodox prayer?
Not in the same way. I mean, like, yes, I felt something. And
something,
I, like,
yeah.
It was good, and I could tell it was something good, but it wasn't the same thing. Like, this was the same experience of, like, okay, here I am. Come here.
Oh,
and so, no, it wasn't the same feeling of assurance before. It wasn't the same experience. But this was the same. It was, God is here, and you need to be here, too. And also, another big thing I noticed in my first visit to an Orthodox church was that it was the first time where I felt like I was in a church where it wasn't about me or the people in the congregation, but it was actually about God.
Mm-hmm.
It was actually about worshiping God. It wasn't about entertaining the people or educating the people. Mm-hmm. It's about actually praying and worshiping. Mm-hmm. And I only realized that on the other side, you know, when I went to the Orthodox Church, that's what had been going on before. That it wasn't really about worship or prayer. It was about learning something or being entertained or mm-hmm. feeling something. But this was actually about something other than myself and other than what I can see. It's actually a real transcendent experience that goes beyond the natural. Mm-hmm. And so from that Sunday on, I didn't go to the Catholic Church again. I didn't go to the Episcopal Church again. Mm-hmm. I went to the Orthodox Church.
But before that, you never tried something from Far East?
No.
No. You were all Christian?
I suppose.
Yeah.
I mean, until I was 14, I didn't really know anything or believe anything. Mm-hmm. But I don't think I would have said I was...
Yeah, because Buddhism and meditation, Hinduism is very common these days in Western world.
Yeah, it's just becoming more common, but I was never really into that.
Mm-hmm. 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 And how about your parents? Did they realize that you're going to the church more often than before and, mm-hmm. and changing you?
They noticed, yeah. Mostly they were very against it. They did not like it.
Yes.
I'm not quite sure why. I mean, I guess they just kind of thought it was weird.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're kind of just non-religious Americans, very materialistic, very much into just acquiring things.
Yeah.
And suddenly I didn't care anymore about that. Mm-hmm. And they just didn't understand. And then, I mean, to be fair to them, I was kind of weird about it at first. Like, just kind of too intense.
Yeah.
Like we all can be when we first embark on a journey.
Yeah.
And I talked about it too much, and it was probably really annoying.
Well,
like, Dad, do you want to hear about the Sixth Ecumenical Council? Like, sure.
What about your sister?
Oh, we didn't really talk.
No?
We didn't have good
She was older than you?
She's older. I mean, she was still at home, but she was into drugs and things, and so we didn't talk, really. Oh. It was a bad relationship.
She was in drugs.
She still is.
Excuse me?
She still is.
Oh, she still is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. How old is she?
28 or 29.
Oh.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Before we proceed, tell us a little bit about today's life in the United States, especially in terms of young people.
Mm-hmm.
And how does it go today? Because I used to live in New York, in the United States, more than 20 years ago.
Right, yeah.
I think it changed.
I think it's changed a lot, yeah. I think it's changing very rapidly.
Oh, yeah. What can you say about today's life in the United States?
It's becoming much harder, I think. Yeah. Life is becoming harder. Like it used to be, you know, my parents' generation, that you go to college and then you get a job and you're fine. Whereas now, you go to college and you have $50,000 in debt and then you work in a coffee shop.
Yeah.
I mean, of course, that's not the case for everyone. But yeah. More and more, that's what's happening. And
mm-hmm.
more and more people are feeling very lost, I think.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like my parents' generation, they didn't really generally raise their children all that religious.
Mm-hmm.
I think they sort of thought it would be like, they just somehow acquire a sense of God naturally.
Mm-hmm.
And then that didn't actually happen.
Yeah.
They've just become very materialistic, and especially I noticed a constant need to be entertained.
Yeah.
They can't just sit and be. They can't be quiet.
Mm.
They can't read a book.
Yeah.
They have to, you know, be on Facebook and playing games and things all the time.
Mm.
And all they seem to really know is how to enjoy themselves and have fun.
Yeah.
That's all they want to do, and that's what they see the point of their life as being, is how to have the most fun. And it's really quite sad. I think most of them know it's sad, deep down. Because even after I became Orthodox, you know, I went to university and I tried to be like that,
uh-huh.
and it didn't work. But I mean, I tried to just be like, oh, I want to be normal now, and just be like the normal people, and go out and have fun. And,
Is it still a common thing for a young American or for average American to go to shrink? How do you say?
Yes, I think almost everyone has a therapist.
Yeah.
I don't know.
That's really something tragical, I can say.
It is, and I think most people are on some kind of psychiatric medication for depression and such.
Yeah.
And more people, it's almost like, I mean, I know that some people really have a problem in their brain with chemicals and such, and so I'm not talking about those people.
Oh, no, of course not.
But it seems more and more, it's almost like popular to have some kind of mental illness, like, oh, I have ADD, oh, I have ADHD, oh, I'm bipolar. It's like, no, you're not.
At least I have something else.
Yeah. It's like people are starting to define themselves by what's wrong with them. But then they want it to be accepted as if it's normal. Like, it's not a problem anymore. It's just an alternative lifestyle. Yeah. Well, I was just born this way.
Yeah.
And so I think that increasingly young people in America are very sad, really. Mm. They don't show it necessarily all the time. They seem to do everything they can to hide it. But they're very sad deep down. Mm. And their use of, you know, drugs and sex and stuff is just to cover up their own pain inside. Mm. And the more that they indulge in these things, the more apparent it is they're very empty inside and very, very depressed.
Yeah. So what happened to you? You mentioned that you went to university.
Mm-hmm.
What did you choose for yourself?
Well, I went to a Jesuit school in America, in Seattle.
Mm-hmm. And it was a theological school?
You can major in theology, but it's like a regular university, but run by Jesuits. You can study a lot of different things. Mm-hmm. It's not a religious.
So what did you study?
First, I was doing philosophy, and then I was doing French, and then I realized that I speak French, and why am I studying it? And then my spiritual father at the time, who was a Metropolitan Jonah of the OCA, mm-hmm. though at that time he was still the abbot of St. John's Monastery.
Where was it from?
In Manton, California.
Mm-hmm.
He told me to change my major to theology. So in the end, I got a degree in theology.
Mm.
But I actually studied three different things.
Yeah.
I really just couldn't make up my mind. And I had almost enough credits that I would have had a minor in linguistics because I studied way too many languages in college.
So I realize you speak Serbian as well.
Yes. I'm learning it, but...
So you have that gift for languages, I believe.
Maybe, I don't know.
Yeah.
The other interview I did with Vesna, that was all in Serbian.
Mm-hmm.
And it went okay, actually. But I wanted to give you better answers, so we're doing English.
Of course, yeah. Of course. And it's good for this show to be for English speakers.
Yeah.
People, yeah.
But yeah, in college I studied Greek, both ancient and modern.
Oh, really?
And Chinese and Russian.
Oh.
And ancient Syriac.
You're going after the steps of Father Seraphim Rose.
Maybe.
I don't know how far you're going. You're going to go, but you know, because he spoke, he knew Chinese and
he
ancient
did.
Chinese.
Yes.
He was a great intellectual.
Yes, he was, and he knew Chinese so well that people said that if you talked to him like on the phone and you couldn't see his face, you'd think he was Chinese. That's what I've heard.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah, he was a seeker. He was a real quester.
Mm-hmm. He was, yeah.
So how does it go further on? I mean, you're studying and but
yeah.
You're attending, of course, the church and liturgy.
Mostly. Well, okay. So I was.
Where was that? Where was that in Seattle?
Yeah. So I was baptized when I was 17, mm-hmm. still in high school, and then I graduated and I went to Seattle University, the Jesuit school. And then, yeah, you know, at first I was going to liturgy and stuff and being involved in the church. And most of my breaks from college, I actually went to a monastery.
Really?
I didn't go home. I went to a monastery.
Which one?
St. John's Monastery in Manson, California.
Mm-hmm. Where so tell me, during those years, did you still have that feeling that from Mexico, or it vanished a little bit?
I still had it. But then it went away. After my first year of college, I had some problems, and then I kind of decided I want to be normal now. I don't want to do this anymore.
Uh-huh.
Like, I didn't say, there was never a time where I would have said that, you know, I wasn't Orthodox. I would have always said that, you know, yes, I'm Orthodox. But
yes.
There was a
maybe not that deep, huh?
But for about a year, I didn't really go to church, and mm-hmm. I was kind of just like living like the students around me and just doing whatever I wanted to do,
mm-hmm.
and I didn't think about morality or pray and.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, after that I never really got that feeling again.
Yes.
But
but it was a call.
Yeah, I mean, I still got a call one day where I woke up one morning after, again, about a year of not really going to church that much, mm-hmm. not really caring and just doing whatever. And I just woke up one morning and suddenly in my heart this voice said, "What are you doing?" And I suddenly was like, "What? What?" And so suddenly I was just like, I just felt repulsed by everything I'd been doing. And I saw that I traded gold for dirt, and that I'd thrown everything away. Mm. And, you know, I was with my friends at the time, and suddenly I was just like feeling like I need to get out of here. Like, I need to leave right now. And so I just made something up. Like, and so I left, and I think it must have been a Saturday, because later that day I ended up at Vigil. It must have been Saturday. Mm-hmm. But I went to Vigil, and I just cried the entire time. I actually couldn't even stay. Like, I couldn't stay there. It was just too painful. And so I stood outside the church crying the entire time. And I think that was maybe the beginning of a sense that I wanted to be a monk.
When was that?
That was 2008. And maybe mm-hmm. It was shortly after Easter, I think, shortly after Pascha, uh-huh. 2008. And so then I went for the entire summer to the monastery. You know, so it was like the end of the school year, so it was getting close. And so I asked Father Jonah if I could come, and he said yes. So. And he knew what I'd been doing and all that. And so I went to the monastery and sort of recovered myself spiritually. And yeah, and then I went back to school and was more involved in the church. I started going to a different parish because partly why I quit going was problems with the parish and the priest, and he was kind of too strict mm-hmm. and didn't really understand young people.
In the Russian church?
Yeah. Well, actually, it was the Orthodox Church in America. And then I started to go, and it was like all converts to the Orthodox faith mm-hmm. in that parish. Mm-hmm. And they're very good people, very loving people.
Yes.
And the priest and I, we get along now, but at the time we had some misunderstandings.
Yeah.
And so Father Jonah recommended I try this other parish. It was St. Nicholas Church, which is actually where...
Hosea as well.
No, it's Rokor, Russian Church Abroad.
Uh-huh.
And it's like all Russian people, all in Russian and Slavonic, and so mm-hmm. it was a hugely different experience for mm-hmm. me. But I think that's what I needed at the time.
Yeah.
I actually really loved it. Mm-hmm. And that's actually the parish where St. John of San Francisco died. He died in that parish in Seattle.
Oh, really?
Yes, he reposed there
mm-hmm.
in 1966.
Mm-hmm.
And so there I just, I got more into like Russian and learning Russian language and Slavonic and mm-hmm. maybe more traditional orthodoxy as opposed to American version, which is good. It has its place. I'm not criticizing it, but mm-hmm. it was a good experience.
Yeah.
And I kept going to the monastery on my breaks from school, and it was good.
So actually, how many languages do you speak now?
I don't know. It depends on how you consider speak.
Well, at least understand.
So English, French, Russian more or less,
uh-huh.
Serbian, Greek, those ones mostly I can understand.
And mm-hmm.
I can sort of understand Chinese, but I don't really use it that much, so it's gotten really bad. It's
yeah.
very sad.
Yeah.
I've lost it.
Yeah.
And I learned some Norwegian from my grandma,
mm-hmm.
but again, I haven't really used it, so...
She came actually from Norway?
Yeah,
or?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. But when I was coming to Serbia, I went through Norway, and I spoke Norwegian to people. It was pretty cool.
Yeah.
But yeah. So I don't know how many that is, but whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And
good.
So in the monastery, my main task is translation. Translating what? Books. And also interpreting for some guests.
So you're actually becoming a novice?
I became a novice right after university.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, that's a funny story, too.
I believe
so. So my parents were still, like, really against me being Orthodox.
Mm-hmm.
And then they were even more against the idea of becoming a monk. Like, they were just
really?
So against that.
Yeah.
But, okay, it got really nasty, and so I didn't even tell them that I was leaving.
Mm-hmm.
I just kind of left. And then about a month later, my mom figured it out, and she called the monastery to see if that's where I was.
Uh-huh.
And then we didn't talk to each other for 2 years.
Oh, for 2 years?
Yeah, we only talked again when...
Mother and his father?
Both of them, we didn't
both
talk.
Both of them, yeah.
So, then when my grandpa died in 2012 on Theophany,
mm-hmm.
So in January 2012, my mom called me to tell me, and that was the first time we talked in 2 years, really.
Oh, really?
And so then I went out for his funeral, and so then we started talking more normally, slowly. And now we talk normally.
Mm-hmm.
But for about 2 years, we didn't talk to each other.
Yeah. How do they look on your life now? Do they understand a little bit better this, the whole thing?
I think they understand it better,
mm-hmm.
and I think they like it better now.
But, of course, they didn't accept it yet.
I sort of has accepted it. At least my mom no longer asks me, like, so what do you want to do later in your life? Like, have you thought about other jobs you might want to do? Like, she doesn't ask that anymore, at least. Yeah. I think she's accepted that that's the way it is.
Mm-hmm.
And even in some ways, I think she's you know, happy about it. Like, I've seen her sometimes when I'm up visiting, telling her friends, like, this is my son, and he's a monk. And whereas before, she wouldn't be like that. I mean, the first time, you know, when I saw her at my grandpa's funeral, she was talking to one of my aunts about it. And my aunt, you know, just to give you an idea of what my mom said, she said, well, I guess it's better than being homeless. But, no, it's better now, and she gets it better. She understands better, but really only my grandparents understand it, because they're more religious and they go to church, and so they actually understand the value of a life devoted to prayer, and that that's actually something important for the world. My mom, she's more kind of focused on, like, oh, what books are you working on now, and sort of the more peripheral aspects of monasticism, but...
Yeah.
At least it's something. And then my dad actually has become Orthodox now.
Oh, really?
He became Orthodox earlier this year, the Sunday before Great Lent started. He was baptized.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
He did by his free will, of course.
I mean, yes. Yes.
But through you, in a way.
In a way, yeah. That's actually very interesting, too. Because he's actually very sick now.
Oh.
And he normally actually can't talk anymore.
Oh.
Can speak. He doesn't have the faculty to speak anymore.
What was it? Like a brain stroke or cancer?
It's some kind of dementia. They're not quite sure what it is exactly.
Oh.
But it developed shortly after I entered the monastery. So it was very strange for me. I saw him again after 2 years. He was almost totally different.
Oh, yeah.
And so he's generally very confused. He doesn't know what's going on. He can't really talk.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't have the faculty. But on Christmas last year, 2013, I called my parents. And my mom put my dad on the phone, and normally it's kind of like a monologue, because he can't really talk, and it's just me talking to him about what's going on, and he just listens. And he can understand better than he can talk, but still.
Mm-hmm.
And suddenly, I could tell that he was trying to tell me something, but he was trying to find the words, and really struggling, and trying to get it out, and he was really having a hard time.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, this part is miraculous. He actually was able to vocalize all these things that had happened in his life that were sinful, some of which involved me, and he told me about them, and he said that he was sorry, and that he wanted forgiveness, and how does he find this? Which, he can't talk like that normally. He can't vocalize these things. And I was just like... And so, you know, then he asked me to be baptized, and I was like, you want to be baptized in the Orthodox Church? And he's like, yes. And again, this, he can't normally follow a conversation like that. That's... He can't do that. Like, you can't just say, oh, he was confused, because he can't talk normally. He can't follow a conversation. Like, not, it's not like some dementia where they can talk and they're just totally out of it and they don't know what they're saying. Like, he just can't talk. So that you can, just by him following a conversation, anyone could see that something was going on miraculous. And so I talked to him about baptism in the church, and I said, you know, I'll talk to mom about it, because, you know, he can't organize himself. He can't do that anymore. So I didn't tell her at the time. I decided to wait and see if he actually remembered. So 2 weeks later, on the Orthodox Christmas, I called him again. And I just talked to my dad and tried to see if he remembered. And he remembered everything he said. And he asked me again. Like, he's like, I want to be baptized. Which, okay, good. Normally he can't put a sentence together. And he's talking. And so I'm like, okay, well, put mom on the phone. And so I told her finally what had happened.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, well, I want to talk to him about it. You know, she was kind of defensive. I'm like, okay, you try to talk to him, because I can't talk. And so then a few weeks later, you know, I called back, and I asked her if she talked to him. And she's like, yes, I talked to him, and I think it's okay. You know, he's very insistent about it. Which, again, it's like, you know, they can't remember anything. He doesn't know what day it is or where he is. But she said that he was very insistent that he wanted this to happen, and he kept talking about it.
Mm-hmm.
She doesn't do that.
Yeah.
And so she said, it's fine. So we made the arrangements, and I came up, and it was right before Lent, and he was baptized.
Mm.
And like, he can't even read anymore, so his godparents, they read it for him, and it was like baptizing a child. But
but I believe he's not a very old man.
No, he's 63.
Yeah.
And I think, honestly, in a way, that was how God saved him, was this disease.
Yeah.
You know, the fathers say that a lot of people are saved through an illness like this.
Yeah. So now it's turned on your mother.
Yeah, and because she also sees the miracle that happened, and I think that's why she allowed it to happen.
Yeah.
Because she could have just said, no, it can't
be
baptized.
Exactly.
And she sees.
Mm-hmm.
And she's becoming more open to Orthodoxy, I think. And it was really a miracle, even the baptism. Like, I was scared, like, is this going to work? Like, is he going to suddenly freak out and just it won't happen? Because he frequently just gets confused, and whatever you're doing, it just can't happen because he's so confused. But he was very, like, livid the entire time. You could tell that he knew what was going on. And then when they were doing the creed, he started to recite the creed along with them, which, that was amazing. I mean, he knew it from before, from when he grew up in the Anglican Church, but it was very weird to see him doing it, because normally he's not that in tune with things. And then again, he also, when he made his life confession, we weren't sure what would happen, so the priest had me come too, because I can sort of figure out what he's saying sometimes and help him to talk.
Was it in Russian church, or was it?
It was in the Greek church.
In Greek church.
In Seattle. And so I was there in the confession trying to help him talk, but I was surprised that he actually could say anything at all, and he actually confessed things. And I was just blown away, and the priest was too. He'd never seen anything like it.
Yeah.
And
that's beautiful.
My dad managed to learn how to say the Jesus prayer when I was there. I taught him, and I read him books, because he can't read, so I read him, like, Orthodox books when we were there. And he actually paid attention.
Yeah.
Normally he can't pay attention. And so I'm still just kind of blown away. We named him after St. John of Shanghai in San Francisco.
And what was his previous name?
John,
yeah.
I felt like it was a good fit. Like, I felt like St. John had been praying for him and protected him.
Good. So at that time you were still at the monastery in San Francisco?
No. So I became a monk right after university in 2010. In Monastery of St. John of San Francisco, which is in Manton, California. It's several hours to the north.
How do you say?
Manton.
Manton.
Yeah, several hours to the north, in Northern California. And so I became a monk there.
How long were you a novice?
I was only a novice for like a year.
Uh-huh.
And then I was sponsored a Ryasafor monk on St. Nicholas Day in 2011.
At the same monastery?
Yes. And then in the summer of 2012, I went to go to Plesina, to St. Herman's Monastery. And so that's where I've been since 2012.
You've been there before?
I'd actually never been there before.
Oh, how come you decided?
Just
like that?
But I've been there since then, in St. Herman's Monastery. So my dad was baptized when I was monk in St. Herman's.
So tell us a little bit now about your life in a monastery in St. Herman's. That's Plesina as well,
yes.
as a matter of fact.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit now, because I believe that most of the people who are going to listen to this show, they don't know about Orthodox monasticism. Maybe they have some ideas about Roman Catholic monasticism, but this is not very common thing, you know, Roman Orthodox, Orthodox Christian monasticism.
At St. Herman's, it was founded by Father Seraphim Rose. In the 1960s, the blessing of St. John of San Francisco. He was Father Seraphim Rose's spiritual father. And Father Seraphim's vision was kind of a desert monasticism, living out in the wilderness and praying, and but also being focused on missionary work and bringing Orthodoxy to America. And so publishing has always been a huge part of the monastery's work and life. And so, you know, it evolved through the years. And so... the way it is now, we have the morning service. It starts at 5:30 now. We actually only recently changed that. It used to be 4:30. Then we decided that was too early. So it was 5:30.
That's what happens in Serbia as well.
Yeah. I mean, it's just being realistic about who people are and what they are and what they can do and what they can't.
Yeah. Definitely.
Which I think is healthy.
Yeah.
But,
And how long does it last?
It goes about 3 hours.
Liturgy every day?
We don't have the liturgy every day.
Uh-huh.
It's a midnight office, matins, first hour, third hour, sixth hour.
So you have everything except liturgy?
Right, so everything. And so that goes for about 3 hours. We have a meal in the trapeza. And then after that we go and we do our work during the day.
What's your readings?
Mine is... I do translation work, both for books that we're going to publish or for our theological journal, just called The Orthodox Word, where we publish like theological texts from the Holy Fathers and modern writers and stories of martyrs and saints. And so I do Greek translation and French and Russian, and I've actually done Serbian already. It's easier, you know, when you're writing than to speak. But And then I also work with the website. We just redesigned it totally last year, and I helped with that. And I'm also one of the main cooks in the monastery. I cook most of the food. And I also have done some work.
How many brothers are there?
16.
16?
I've also done some work helping with the mission in China, because that was always a dream of Father Seraphim Rose's, was to do Orthodox work in China. But when he was alive, it wasn't possible.
Yeah.
Currently, Orthodoxy is still illegal in China. You can't practice Orthodoxy.
Yeah.
But the government isn't as strict about enforcing that. So the monastery does mission work in China, baptizing people.
Really? You have monks over there?
There is no monks there. And no priests. So they have to visit every year. And they go around China and perform liturgies and baptisms and weddings. And the people, they meet secretly in their homes for prayers. And sometimes priests visit from Eastern Europe, especially from Romania.
What are Chinese people?
These are all Chinese people. And that's also how the faith spreads, is through the just the local Chinese people. They tell their friends about it, and they give them books. And so then when the priest comes from America, they baptize them and give them communion. And there actually are currently seminarians who are Chinese in Russia, but so far they're not priests. And the churches, they're all secret. They're all like just at people's homes. They can't do it in the open. But so I've helped to like edit some of the publications for them in the liturgical books to make sure that they're correct. I didn't translate them because I couldn't do that, but the people who translate them, they're maybe not so theologically educated.
Yeah.
So I'm just looking it over with them to make sure it's okay. And I also put it in Peiyun for the priest. That's the Chinese written in Latin script instead of in characters, so because the priest doesn't actually know Chinese. And so it's trying to make it better so they can follow each other. Because the choir singing in Chinese, and the priest will do a lot of English, but then he tries to do Chinese. And so I put it in Latin script form so he can at least try. And then we try to practice with the tones. I don't know. We'll see what happens.
Which tones do you use? Greek, Serbian, Russian?
No. I mean, like, how in Chinese they...
It's
a tonal language.
Yeah, that's right.
You have to know tones, or you can't say anything.
Really? Yeah.
They won't understand.
They're like singing all the time.
It'd be like equivalent to like in a Western language, like if you change the consonant in the word, it makes it totally different.
Oh.
It's not insignificant. People won't understand if you don't use the right tone. They won't know what you're saying most of the time, unless they're really used to foreigners. That's basically what I do in the monastery. Mostly translation.
And in the evening you have Vespers?
Yeah. Then at 5:30 in the evening we have Vespers. Ninth hour in Vespers. And then we have dinner, and then we wash the dishes, and then after the dishes are done we have Compline, which is longer than in Serbia, I've noticed, because we have the canon and Compline, and we read prayers before sleep from the prayer book.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
So it actually lasts about an hour.
Compline?
Yeah.
Oh, really?
It's a lot longer than Serbia. And then after that, we just you go to your cell and you pray and read and go to sleep.
What time is that? Or nine?
Probably nine, yeah.
Yeah. What about in the afternoon? Do you have some time to withdraw in your cell during the afternoons?
No.
No?
No, you work all day.
Yeah. Busy.
Yeah, it's very busy.
That's good.
That's good for you. Maybe like half the monks are involved in the publishing work, maybe things similar to me. And the other half are more like involved in just keeping the monastery running.
Yeah.
Like they work in the garden, they dig graves, we have a cemetery.
Do you have elderly monks over there? Or mostly?
Sort of, maybe like in their 60s. But most...
Are there novices?
Yes. We have, I think, 4 novices right now. But they're all kind of middle-aged, except for one. He's my age. And we have another monk, who's like a Tanjin monk too. He's my age as well.
So are there mostly Americans?
They're all Americans.
All Americans?
Yeah.
And everything is in English?
So generally. Sometimes we do something in Slavonic. Generally.
But Platina today belongs to Serbian Orthodox Church?
Yes, it's in the Serbian Church since 2000.
From 2000. And Bishop Maxim is there?
Yes, Bishop Maxim is the bishop.
How is your relation with him?
It's really good. He visits a couple times a year, mm-hmm. Which is good because the diocese in America, they're so huge that he's always having to go everywhere.
That's right.
Like someone in Serbia joked that Bishop Maxim has a bigger diocese than the Patriarch of Belgrade, which is true, literally. But he visits a couple times a year. Normally he brings like someone interesting with him to give a lecture, like mm-hmm. a theology professor or a monk from Greece or Manathos.
Yeah. Yeah, he looks like a very contemporary man. I mean, modern man.
He is.
Yeah, he's a young man and modern man.
He's a very good bishop. I really like him. And
yeah.
Normally, I don't like authority figures, but I like him.
Normally, you don't like what?
Authority figures.
Oh. Uh-huh.
But I like him. And
and who's your abbot?
Father Damascene.
Damascene. Uh-huh. Uh-huh. What about Father Herman?
Oh, he died.
He died?
Earlier this year.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Oh, I didn't know.
It was while I was in Serbia. It wasn't that long ago.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was in June. He died in Minnesota, I think.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. So do you have also the sisterhood around?
Yes, Sisterhood of St. Ksenia.
St. Ksenia. How far is that?
It's about 9 miles down the road from mm-hmm. us.
How many of them?
There's three of them.
Three of them, just three of them.
Yeah, and they're older. They're in their 60s.
Oh, right. Mm-hmm.
But they're very good people, very good people. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And they come to the monastery for liturgy on Saturdays and Sundays and feast days.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes we go there, and it's a good relationship, I think.
And do you have, for example, other obedient, do you have icon painters?
In your house? Yes, two of us paint icons.
Really?
Yeah, me and the other.
Oh, you paint icons? You everything.
I don't get to do it that much, though. It's kind of sad. Like, I've been studying it for 9 years now. Since I was 17 in high school. But
since you were a layman.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I had a teacher.
Uh-huh. What kind of iconography? Russian?
It's Russian. My teacher's teacher.
Horizontal.
Horizontal uh-huh. with egg tempera.
With egg tempera.
And my teacher's teacher was Vladimir Lossky, so it's that style.
Uh-huh. Okay.
So, no, Leonard Uspensky, sorry.
Leonard Uspensky, of course. Lossky is
my mind is not working.
He does theory.
Yeah, Leonard Uspensky was her teacher.
Yes.
So it's that style,
yes.
to give you an idea.
Yes.
But I don't get that much time to do it anymore because of all the translation work they want me to
Maybe
do.
Maybe one day.
So the other monk, his name is Father Sebastian, and he's the same age as me. He's the main one.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Good. And okay, we are approaching the end of this very interesting conversation. Okay, now tell us what you think about the importance of monasticism, particularly in today's world. Is it something that belongs only to the monks, and they're some kind of egotists who are saving themselves, or it's something a little bit different than that?
I think it's something for everyone, definitely. I think it's something that's vital to the world and to its existence.
Yeah.
You know, first and foremost, to have prayer for the world, because prayer supports the world and makes the world continue and calls God's mercy onto the world and God's grace, which I've seen it in many people's lives.
Mm-hmm.
But more practically, I think it's just to be a witness that we're not of this world, that our life is not what's here, that life is not what you see before you, that life is divine, life is God. Because in the world, you know, you get so lost and you think that it's just your job and your family and your friends and what you like to do. And it's so easy to forget God. But in the monastery, it's so apparent that God is here and that God is everything. And that is what I think is so very important for people, is to be able to see that life is more than they can see, and they can come to a monastery and see that.
Yeah.
And as monastics, I think that's our duty, is to not lose sight of that ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for me, not to get lost and like, okay, I need to translate this book and I have to cook dinner and I have to do this and that. Because it's equally easy in a monastery to lose sight of God and for it to just become a job, like any other job.
Yeah.
It's so easy.
That's a good point, yeah.
But just to always remain focused and to try to say the Jesus prayer in everything that we're doing, and to remember that everything that we're doing it for God and not for the abbot or for whoever is telling us to do it.
That's right.
I think that enables us to have a spirit that we have something to give, because people are absolutely right that if monks aren't actually living honestly and trying to save themselves and to save the world through their prayers, then yeah, they are egoists. We are egoists.
Mm-hmm.
We are being selfish.
Mm-hmm.
But if we're doing what we're supposed to be doing and living in prayer and with God, then it's not at all selfish. I think it's a very selfless thing, mm-hmm. because you're called to give up everything of yourself,
yeah.
all of your belongings, and also all of your thoughts and opinions, and it's all given to Christ, and you're just called to be a witness to Him, to a world that's dying. And I don't know what else we could do, you know. I think that's of ultimate importance. You know, earlier we were talking about how sad modern people are, how depressed they are, and to see something like that is very life-changing for a lot of people. They've seen it so many times where someone just visits by chance, or someone told them, and they come, and it changes their life. They find God, and they become happy because they find God.
Mm-hmm.
And they wouldn't have found that in the world, I think, because we need... In our times, we're all just so lost that we need something clear.
Yeah.
We can't pick up on subtleties anymore. We need it really obvious or we won't get it.
Yeah.
And so I think monasticism is more important than ever, yeah. you know.
And how do you see Orthodox Christianity in future in America?
Mm.
Is there a chance for it to spread more, or is it just like the best kept secret, as they say?
People still keep calling it the best kept secret. In a way, it's true, but
yeah.
the church is definitely growing in America,
mm-hmm.
without a doubt.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a relative term when it's been so small,
yeah.
but it's growing. And I think that probably now about half the people in America who are Orthodox are converts.
Mm-hmm.
And... most of the time services are actually done mostly in English. It's actually less common to find a church where it's in another language.
Yeah.
And I think the main obstacle isn't so much people's Catholic or Protestant background, so much as it is secularism like it is here in Europe.
Yeah.
And people just becoming less interested in God. That's something I've noticed, really, mm-hmm. is it's not that people disagree with the church, it's that they just don't care.
Yeah.
They don't care about God or finding something else.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, okay, I'll preface that. I think that they do care deep down. Everyone cares. They just don't know they care anymore. And I think that's the church's challenge, is to find out how to engage people like that, how to make them see that they are actually interested. It's not to argue. That's how a lot of the church has been so far in America, is polemics. It's like, this is why Catholics are wrong. This is why Protestants are wrong. I think that actually engages very, very few people. Very few people actually know about those kinds of things. Even in their own church, they don't even know what the Orthodox are speaking against. They don't know. It's engaging people's hearts and souls and spirits, you know. And I think that as long as the church can do that, then it has a future.
Yeah.
As long as we can figure out a way to meet people where they are, it has a future. And personally, I think that, yes, the church in America has a future. I see young people coming, and I see the church growing, and the church's monasteries are growing, and there are young monastics, and I think that there is a future. It's just a question of continuing to figure out how to address people who are so secular they don't know that they care about God.
Yeah.
Which I think is a way where we could learn something from the church in Europe, because you've dealt with that for longer. In America, people stayed religious longer. Now it's ending, but...
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I think that there's hope for the church in America. Yeah.
Yeah. Father Sofroni, did you ever regret becoming a monk?
Actually, for the first year that I was there, almost every day I was like, okay, I'm going to leave today. I'm done now. And I would come up with like these complex plots for how I was going to leave the monastery. I never did any of them.
Uh-huh.
Somehow God protected me in this state, but it was really hard the first year.
Is it easier now?
It's easier now. It's because you have to reset your whole self. You
yeah.
have to die to yourself.
Yeah.
Not that I've perfected that, but I mean, at least I'm used to trying to do that, as opposed to,
mm-hmm.
no, I don't want to do that. I want to stay the same. You know, there's nothing wrong with me.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't work in a monastery if you don't think there's something wrong with you.
Yeah. But basically, are you happy now?
Yes.
Yeah,
yes. I don't think I would want to go back to live a secular life in
mm-hmm.
the world. So
yeah.
It honestly, it kind of bores me. Like, for example, like if I'm visiting my family or something, and we're watching TV, I'm just like, well, this is boring. Or like, you know, we're going somewhere, and I'm like, why?
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah.
So we are really at the end of this.
Okay.
Of this. I mean, no problem, we can talk 2 hours more, but I believe we are approaching the end. Just tell us, why did you come to Montenegro? I believe you visited other regions of Serbian
yes.
lands.
Yes.
Yeah.
Montenegro specifically? Mm-hmm. You want to know?
Yeah, let's say, why are you here in this monastery of St. Peter of Cetinje?
Ah, because I was in Bosnia, in mm-hmm. Tvrdoš monastery.
Uh-huh, in Tvrdoš.
And I kind of just wanted a change, and so I talked uh-huh. to...
So you've been there for a while?
Yeah, I was there for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And I talked to Father Sava of Dejčani monastery.
Mm-hmm.
I've been there, and I said, what do you think I should do? And he said, to come here, so here I am.
Uh-huh. And you've been also in Dejčani?
Yes, I was in Dejčani a few weeks ago.
For how long?
Maybe a week. Uh-huh. I really liked it. And actually, I'm going back for a year.
For a year?
Yes.
In Dejčani?
Yes, Father Safa blessed me to go, and my abbot blessed me, and the bishop blessed me.
Oh, interesting. Interesting. Nice.
So I'm going for a year. After I finish my regularly scheduled journey yeah. in October, I will go to
It's
Dejčani.
A very specific place. I mean, if you realize that.
Yeah.
But the Brotherhood, I was there for 12 years, and I remember them fondly, and I love especially Father Sava.
Yes.
He's a very, very strong personality and very nice man.
Yes, yes. The woman who was driving me there I was coming from Draganac in eastern Kosovo, she was driving me to Dejčani, and she said, when I first came here, I went through the gates, and it was like walking in paradise. And I was kind of like, yeah, sure. But I walked, and I'm like, oh, it is! And so I was like, please, can I come back? And it's also just so I can learn Serbian better.
Yeah.
You know, I need more time to learn. And so it'll be good.
Good, good. Father Safran, thank you very much.
Yes, thank you.
And I forgot to ask you, are you in priesthood?
No, I'm just a monk.
Just a monk. Okay, but please, your greetings and your monastic blessing for our listeners.
Yes, may God bless all of you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening Radio Svetigora, the radio station of the Serbian Orthodox Church, Diocese of Montenegro and the Seaside. Blessed by His High Eminence, Metropolitan Amfilohije.